Hi, and welcome to Backstage at Microsoft Architect Insight 2010. And it's a great delight to have with me today Ian Mortimer, Chief Architect of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. And Ian, it's great you've just done a keynote here for us, and thanks for that. An inspirational talk for the start of the day, start of the conference. So I'm very pleased.
Well, thanks for having me here again.
So. Yes, well, absolutely. And you know, we go way back, and I remember our conversations out in Seattle some years back on subjects that are not far from where, you know, you've been talking about today. Now, you talked about, the subject was next generation enterprise, yeah. And you kind of alluded, well, you talked about five technical pillars that technologists or the IT part of the house needs to get its grip on. But the thing that really excited me, I know all of that excited me, obviously, but was the orange peel analogy. And this idea of the outside-in organization, the world of multi-sourcing, this whole change that cloud and other technology enablers are really allowing, I think is really having this profound effect. So it was really interesting to hear you talk about this from your own experiences. So the orange peel analogy, do you want to just give us a flavor of what that meant?
Yes, so the orange. As we've been talking about today, as organizations move to this multi-sourcing model of where parts of processes are now being done by third parties, it profoundly changes the way that IT is actually being delivered to a business. Traditionally, an organization has this hard boundary it can place around itself, its data center, its firewalls, to protect the information that's within it. With the new model, everything becomes exposed. And the analogy is a bit like an orange. The nice, sweet, fleshy parts are protected by this quite leathery skin. In the new organization, the orange gets turned inside out. The fleshy parts become available really for anyone to see, and frankly, the skin can be discarded.
That's a great analogy, and I've certainly been sort of thinking about this sort of outside-in type organization as you think about IT capabilities or business capabilities, then you can see that you could start to slot these in, you could source these from different suppliers. I guess the supply chain needs to mature as a consequence from being outsourcers, monolithic outsourcers, to being service providers, and the new ISV needs to change to be, there's a convergence in terms of all these suppliers of software, which is really intrigues me. But the analogy is really great on another level, where it talks about the fleshy inner side, and if you just peel the, you know, and turn the orange inside out, then all that flesh and all that succulence, but that sort of looseness is available to everybody else to see. So clearly there needs to be some constraints around that, some protection.
Yes, I think you're right. So clearly we need to build a spine for the organization, a kind of technical spine with which we can hold the fleshy parts together. Obviously, they're around things like, you know, good flexible standards on integration, interoperation across third-party suppliers, the correct level of security and identity management, recognizing there are significant issues around data control and mastery and recoverability that having everything running in a data center used to give us. In the future, we won't have all those things for granted. So organizations need to invest in that spine with which to hold up all their technology, as well as their supply chain.
Mm. Now, that's a great analogy, and I love the idea of the soft, fleshy bits. But that is, you know, by the nature of the description, it suggests fragility and hence the need for security and all those aspects that you just mentioned. But by turning that organization in that inside out, or the IT, I guess you're starting with, in a sense, you're sourcing it from different providers, but that is, the IT is the business, as many might say, in respect, there's a very tight coupling in most organizations now between the IT that delivers the business capability. Do you actually foresee the world where that business function is being delivered by a third party above the technology layer, or is it still a technology provider providing that service into some IT element within the corporation that then glues it together for the business?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I'm not too sure I'd ever want to say that IT was a business. I think fundamentally IT always has to support businesses, but certainly
I did mean it in that context.
Yeah, so. Certainly in data intensive organisations like banks or pharmaceuticals or whatever, obviously IT is vital to that. To a question though about would third party providers ever deliver business services? I think the answer is yes. And we're certainly now starting to see the emergence, particularly in the developing countries, of organisations that deal with routine processing of parts of our normal business life cycle. So, for example, settlement processing is a fairly commodity-based activity, and there are now organisations, particularly in India, that are just handling that basically soup to nuts.
So that's a commodity, as you called it. So these commodity services, have they always been commodity services, or have they gone through that transition from being at one point in their life cycle of being the innovative part of the business, and now gradually are they becoming the commodity parts as new innovations happen within the bank, within the organisation? Or where I'm leading to there is, does it follow that innovation life cycle, or is it that we're going to multi-source the bits that you can commoditise, but there's still going to be core IP or processes or capabilities that would stay within the organisation itself?
Yeah, I think the key thing in my mind is to think about is actually around business differentiation. Obviously, if there's a core capability within an organisation or there's core assets that are being utilised, it is less likely they'll be actually outsourced or put into a multi-source environment. Where, for example, a capability is needed, that's the time to reach out to third-party supply chain to see if you can bring that capability or that technique actually in-house.
That's an interesting point, because it'd be great. We can all go to the marketplace and we can look down the list of all products that in line with the business capability we're trying to source. And we can source it, and we can source the best of breed or based on price or whatever. That's lovely, but those marketplaces might not don't exist to my mind today. Some do, I guess. So, how do you shop around for the capability that you're trying to source? Where do you look first, rather than it's a buy versus build kind of question in a sense?
Yes, I think in many respects, the first problem to understand is actually what's the level of disentanglement an organization needs to make in order to actually outsource something. And I talked earlier about the desiccated business process, or ensuring as architects we develop points of deliberate fracture so we can actually move pieces around more easily, and that will be a fundamental prerequisite for the new IT world order, as it were.
So to your point, that sounds to me little bit, it's a naive point of view, but it's like SOA in a sense. The fracture points are like what SOA has really been teaching us for a while, is to have those well-defined boundaries as interface points. Would you agree that it's SOA is the kind of architectural pattern that holds true in the case of developing fracture points in architecture?
I think you're right that fracture points are certainly have analogues in SOA technology. And I think, like SOA itself, if you look across the whole of computer science development, you will see themes reappearing at different levels of complexity all the time. So 20-odd years ago, when you and I were programming, we were told to have good encapsulation of procedures and data structures, etc. Then we had the emergence of object technology, etc., SOA, etc. So these techniques, in some respects, aren't new. It's just the level and the scope at which they operate at are becoming much greater. I think the fundamental difference we're going to see moving forward, as we move through this decade, is that yes, there will be a greater service orientated delivery or also event driven architecture, and in some sense the two are bound together quite carefully. But above all, the issues now of true distributed state management, recovery, and a surety of business processes will really come to the fore. The point I was making here is there are very few organizations actually allow the state of a business process to leave its own boundaries. It keeps it within the orange, as it were, and the new order will actually start to allow that to be fully outsourced and managed by third parties. And that's the fundamental difference.
I guess the lessons we could learn from retail and the whole supply chain, the physical world of supply chains here, isn't there? And you start to get into the world, I think you mentioned, well, you definitely did mention monitoring. So the one thing that, another thing you covered in the talk this morning was globalization, and we all see and feel that in different parts. I certainly, in my role, am very aware of this globalization at all levels of the market. Could you touch on some of the, because you said some interesting things there around different emerging markets in the world of IT that I thought were really interesting.
Yeah. I think, you know, obviously globalization is a very complex and broad subject, but some of the key themes I'd want to talk about are, we see the economic emergence of Asia, in particular India and China now coming to the fore, but also we probably forget Brazil and in Latin America as well as also being a major economic force that's starting to pick up pace. One of the things I find when I look across large organizations is most of the systems are actually developed for the Western world, or actually the Western character set. And as organizations become truly global, the ability, for example, of having customer master systems that support foreign character sets, kanji, etc., become vitally important. The issue for globalization for us all, and not just for large organizations, is we now need to start inventorying those systems to truly make sure they're ready in the future for handling a global customer base.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. No, that's, and we could go continue that conversation quite a lot. I think back on the multi-sourcing point in relation to this, one of the kind of restrictions, if we think about cloud, in particular, people throw up the issues of data sovereignty or protection, compliance, regulation. You're in the banking world, so you know those very intimately. Does that prevent us from taking advantage of these new locations, these emerging markets for technology, capability, delivery, and business? How do those things flex in response to that?
Now, that's a very good question, and obviously, you know, statutory regulation is something that has to be not only heeded but actually also obeyed, and you know, as banks we do that. I think in some respects, though, one of the solutions to this problem is actually an architectural one. And it's actually for architects learning to not see their corpus of data as being a single lump of stuff, but actually being able to segment that data into parts of which may be allowed to cross international boundaries. So, for example, risk information that bears no relationship to specific individuals, i.e. is just a set of numbers, could, in theory, be moved out of a country for calculations to be carried on them. Obviously, customer-sensitive data has to be controlled within the data protection laws of the country in which it resides. And,
you know. Yeah, absolutely. So that being able to anonymize and extract those things to do that processing elsewhere is an architectural set of patterns, and I guess there's patterns all. I know of several projects that are doing those types of things today in financial markets. So I guess those lessons learned will be more broadly available and shared and built upon.
Yeah, so I think that's right.
Yeah, and a backbone to that, and something close to my heart, and I know for you it's true, is interoperability. So the interoperability, as you described it, I thought you had integration, you had interoperability, and I like the two descriptions and the differentiation between the two. Perhaps it's worth just relaying that while we're here.
Yeah, so on the integration side, I see a very common problem, particularly with very large institutions. Large institutions generally use a wide variety of middlewares to undertake what they're doing. But the reality is that most systems interactions are not based on a synchronous technology, they're based on messaging, asynchronous technology. That then leads to potential third-party suppliers being told what middleware they have to use in working with the target organization. For many niche suppliers, the costs in adopting that middleware and testing against that middleware are prohibitive. And that, in my mind, is generating inertia around the new multi-source model really being adopted. You know, obviously, messaging technologies and also common APIs like JMS have been very valuable. APIs are good, they force standardization. But they don't get round of the inherent problem of a particular vendor's middleware. I think an important technology that's been emerging out of a consortium of investment banks, AMQP, of which drives people towards a common wire level format for messaging, will help to reduce the inertia, particularly for small partners, in actually starting to contribute to our value chain.
Yeah, well, AMQP, I mean, it's something I've followed for quite a while, and I know some of the guys who've been involved, and the guy that's joined your company recently, who's been driving that. I agree, it has a great merit and value to it, and it's that low cost of investment to take part in transferring and sharing in that message workload is a great way to see wider adoption. And I think, you know, we've seen that problem historically with the likes of SOAP, and the emergence of REST as being a far more pragmatic approach in many instances, and the heavyweightness, sorry for that, the nature of SOAP has meant you need to have a large an infrastructure to implement those solutions. So, I mean, AMQP, it's a wire level protocol, and I know Microsoft's now got involved, or over the last year or so has been involved. Who's in the consortium? Is it really cross vendor and cross organization?
There are many large vendors involved. Mm. Noteworthy, there are some very large vendors who aren't involved, and I think we just have to watch the space on that.
Right.
And in terms of members of the consortium themselves, there are five or six predominantly investment banks that have been working together on getting some energy behind this.
Yeah, absolutely. So and interoperability as a backbone to that is key, or this you see as an enabler for more interoperability.
Yes, we've talked about the integration problem, the actual ability to, with less friction, move data between organizations. The interop problem is more about knowing that when I send a request off, or when I send data off to a third-party provider, I can have some meta-information view of either how long that processing is going to take, whether their facilities are up and running within normal tolerances, etc., etc. It may be peculiar to investment banking, but I sense also in other organizations that knowing that a party will execute something in a consistent manner, deterministically, is actually as equally as important as actually the service itself.
Absolutely. And the beauty about that model is that you need to have some contractual relationship, service level of some description. And that would contain some levels of performance, or that you're talking about. So, I guess that's good from the model as well, because it allows you. From the consumer perspective, you want to know that it's gone somewhere and it's likely to come back at some reasonable time. If it doesn't, you want to sort of have a word with the supplier that they're not performing against the targets. So it's a natural kind of economic model as a byproduct of the pattern.
It is, and I think it also draws on the learnings that we've had in physical manufacturing using JIT, in time, of where there is a strong communication dialogue completely up and down the supply chain to flatten out delays and bulges of demand, because by flowing that information, things can be smoothed out.
That's excellent. And just before we go, there was one bit at the end, and back to sort of the world of architects and architecture and this growing role that the architects have. You talked about the fact we're used to building static pictures of architectures, and that we need to move to one of a more dynamic view of architecture. Could you expand on that just briefly, and maybe what's your view of what is the modelling environment of the architect tomorrow to support this future generation of businesses?
There is a book by Clement and Bass, and they introduce this analogy of architecture being more about a bird's wing in flight than it is about static buildings. Mm. I think, and kind of reflecting on where businesses is moving in the next 10 years plus, is traditionally architects have been focused on consolidating and simplifying quite static functional blocks. And there you go, we use the word block in the same way as a builder uses the word brick. We have this kind of physical, static, at rest presumption of how we see architecture. I think as we move in through the decade and systems start becoming more dynamic to support the multi-sourced environment as we've talked about, we'll suddenly find that our architecture thinking itself has to evolve. we need to learn metaphors and words which lets us talk about the dynamics of a system as being in flight, in movement, rapidly changing. And that's why I think Clement and Bass are right about seeing architecture as more about a bird's wing than about being constructive.
Fantastic. So I guess that's a good point to leave it. There's more to be heard on the subject, and maybe have a look at that book. But very much architecture is moving away from the world of building architecture metaphors to that of responding to real world dynamics and the dynamics of the business.
Yes, that's right.
Fantastic. Well, pleasure to have the conversation with you, and thanks very much for being at Insight this year. It's been great to talk to you. Thanks.
My pleasure.